total spectrum of growth and development as measured by an infant's attainment of his or her developmental capacities. Infants who fail to attain these basic capacities within the first 6 months of life often become underachievers in the other developmental prerequisites leading to healthy relational attachment. Here's why. Babies are born with seven capacities that, when met, provide objective markers confirming comprehensive attachment is being achieved. The markers include babies who 1. Synchronize their feed week sleep schedules into predictable patterns, 2. Can fall asleep without a rocking or nursing prop, 3. Sleep through the night 8 to 10 consecutive hours, 4. Have a predictable nap routine, 5. Have content wake times and are adapt to self-play, 6. Are able to self-soothe, and 7. Find comfort with other caregivers, specifically fathers, siblings, or grandparents. The progressive achievement of each attachment marker during the critical first 6 months of life are leading indicators that baby is not in a constant state of stress or anxiousness. In contrast, attachment anxiety is often found in the 12, 18-month, or 2-year-old who is not sleeping through the night, not taking regular naps, unable to self-soothe, is anxious when left alone, or not adept at self-play for sustained periods. These are stress indicators associated with the underdeveloped capacities and reveal that attachment deficits exist. Fortunately, there is an alternative. BabyWise helps infants match attachment needs with capacities for a true comprehensive attachment experience. For more on BabyWise attachment, visit our resource page at www.babywise.life. Chapter 3. Babies and Sleep. You are in a coffee shop, enjoying a latte, surfing the web on your mobile device, while your baby plays contentedly with his bright orange teething ring, occasionally glancing up from his car seat. Suddenly, you hear a total stranger comment, "Oh my, what a happy baby you have! So content and alert!" You smile with a gesture of appreciation, but are not surprised by the kind words. Scenes like this are not uncommon to the PDF parent. What do comments like these have to do with sleep? Everything. When your baby begins to sleep through the night, people will invariably say, "You're so lucky," or "You've got an easy baby." Neither statement is true. Your baby will be sleeping through the night because you worked hard to help him achieve the gift of nighttime sleep. You deserve credit for your efforts, but do keep this fact in perspective. Training your baby to sleep through the night is not the final goal of parenting, but it does provide a good foundation for everything else that follows. Sleep, or the lack of this precious commodity, is one of the most significant influences on a healthy life. Sleep is critically important during the first year because the human growth hormone is released during deep sleep. Equally important are the quality and quantity of an infant's sleep because they affect more than just the baby. They also impact the welfare of everyone in the household, making the difference between being a joyful, alert parent or a fatigued one. BabyWise babies are characterized by contentment, healthy growth, and optimal alertness. These babies truly exude happiness, which, after all, is tied back to being well-rested. In fact, healthy full-term babies are born with the capacity to achieve 7 to 8 hours of continuous nighttime sleep between 7 and 10 weeks of age, and 10 to 12 hours of sleep by 12 weeks of age. But these achievements require parental guidance and a basic understanding of how a baby's routine impacts healthy outcomes. Can it really happen? Why some babies are able to sleep through the night early on and others are not has long been the subject of debate and study. The theories range from simple to complex and from logical to bizarre. Well-meaning friends may have told the inexperienced first-time mom that every child is different. They go on to say that some babies are born sleepers and others are not. New mothers hope they luck out and get a sleeper. Behavioral clinicians suggest that a child's temperament is the determining influence on sleep. They tell parents that some children have an easier temperament and are more prone to sleep, while other children fight sleep. More extreme are the suggestions that some babies classified as high need will wake up more often during the night and low need babies sleep longer on their own. Although each statement contains a grain of truth, the statements themselves are outdated. Rest assured, you can and should expect your baby to acquire the skill of sleeping through the night, but rarely does it happen without parental training. Consider the four core sleep facts. Sleep fact 1. Babies do not have the ability to organize their own days and nights into predictable rhythms, but they have the biological need to do so. That is why parents must take the lead and create structure and routine for their babies and for themselves. An infant's feeding routine benefits mom as well. She is healthier, more rested, and less stressed. She has time and energy for other important relationships, her husband, parents, family, and friends. If there are siblings in the home, the baby's routine provides time for planned activities with big brother or sister. As life with baby becomes more predictable, mom can confidently plan the day's activities, knowing she is meeting her baby's needs. Everyone wins with PDF. To increase the likelihood of continuous nighttime sleep, a parent-guided feed-wake sleep routine is essential. The key to nighttime sleep lies in the order of those three daytime activities. First comes feeding time, followed by wake time, and then nap time. The sequence of these three activities repeats itself throughout the day. The more consistent the routine, the more quickly a baby learns to adapt and organize his feed-wake sleep rhythms. Established rhythms lead to continuous nighttime sleep. Sleep fact 2. The quality of each activity is as important as the order of each activity. To re-emphasize the principle of the ripple effect, the stone that creates the initial ripple is the quality of each feeding. That means mom must work to make each feeding a full feeding. Babies, and especially newborns, are prone to doze off while feeding, thereby taking only a partial meal. When that happens, especially with breastfed babies, the child is not taking enough to satisfy his nutritional needs. When mom consistently works with her baby to take a full feeding, it eventually leads to productive wake times. A good wake time impacts nap time, and a good napper is a better feeder. As the quality of each activity deepens, it facilitates healthy nighttime sleep. In turn, optimal sleep in a 24-hour cycle impacts optimal alertness, which improves cognitive function that increases brain growth and encourages a host of other neurological benefits. Where does it all begin? With the first stone. When baby receives a high-quality feeding. Sleep fact 3. From birth onward, infant hunger patterns will either organize into stable and regular periods or become erratic and unpredictable. When infants are fed on the PDF plan, their hunger patterns stabilize. There are two reasons for this. First, babies have an innate ability to organize their feeding times into a predictable rhythm and will do so if encouraged by mom's feeding philosophy. Second, the hunger mechanism, digestion and absorption, responds to routine feedings with a metabolic memory. Routine feedings encourage baby's hunger metabolism to organize into predictable cycles. Erratic feedings or clusters of feeding discourage this. For example, if a mom feeds her baby approximately every 3 hours, let's say 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m., and 10 p.m., the baby's hunger cycle begins to synchronize with those times. When that is established, daytime sleep cycles organize, and then nighttime sleep follows. The exact times above are not as important as the predictability they represent. There is nothing magical about those times. Parents can start at 6 a.m. if that works better for them. The principle here is consistency, which leads to predictability. In contrast, erratic feeding periods work against a child's ability to organize good feeding rhythms, which creates confusion within the child's metabolic memory. For example, the mom who follows a cry-feeding philosophy may feed him at 8 a.m., and 30 minutes later when her baby cries, she feeds him again. An hour may pass, and he feeds, followed by 3 hours before the next feeding, then 20 minutes. The next day, everything is different, including the length of each feeding cycle and the timing of each cycle. When there is no consistency in the amount of time between feedings, and this pattern continues for weeks, it is very difficult for the feed-wake-sleep cycles to stabilize. As a result, these babies have difficulty establishing stable and uninterrupted nighttime sleep, waking as often as every 2 hours on a recurring basis. This pattern may continue for 2 years or more, according to some studies. Not surprisingly, formula-fed babies who are not on a routine usually end up with the same results. Take note of the next fact. Sleep fact 4. It is not what goes in the mouth as much as when it goes in. Failure to establish nighttime sleep is not associated with the source of food, i.e. breast milk or formula. Our sleep study of 520 infants demonstrated that PDF breastfed babies will sleep through the night on average at the same rates and in many cases slightly sooner than formula-fed babies. This statistical conclusion means one cannot rightly attribute nighttime sleep to a tummy full of formula. The statistics also demonstrate that neither the composition of breast milk or formula, nor the speed at which the two are digested, have any bearing on a child's ability to establish healthy nighttime sleep patterns. What is the big deal about sleep? When a 1 or 2-year-old is continually waking at night, it often reflects two possibilities. misguided parenting advice, or misplaced sleep priorities. Unfortunately, these children are forced to exist on a starvation ration of sleep. It is not healthy for them or their parents. Try to imagine what it would feel like to wake up two or more times every night for an entire week. The destructive impact of sleep deprivation on an adult's central nervous system is well documented. Deficits include diminished motor skills, decreased ability to think, irritability, loss of focusing capacity, emotional instability, and cellular and tissue breakdown. That is just a partial list. Now imagine a young child who does not sleep continuously for 8 hours in any of the 365 nights a year. Is it not possible that many of the learning disabilities common in children today are rooted in something as basic as a chronic lack of sleep? As the higher brain continues to develop during the first year of life, the absence of continuous nights of sleep is surely detrimental to the learning process. Statistical norms for PDF babies. A child's body develops faster during the first year of life than any other time. While babies need adequate nutrition to help facilitate healthy growth, they also require extended periods of restorative sleep. Why is that important? Because babies grow during times of extended sleep. The kind of sleep a baby achieves determines the true value of his sleep. Half of baby's sleep is spent in quiet sleep, relaxed sleep pattern, or RSP, and the other half in active sleep pattern, or ASP. Researchers tell us these two patterns alternate about every 30 to 45 minutes during sleep. Noticeable differences exist between the two patterns. During the relaxed sleep state, parents see a peaceful baby. The baby's face is relaxed, eyelids closed and still. He has very few body movements, and breathing is quiet and regular. It is also during this relaxed or deep sleep that 70 to 80% of the baby's growth hormone is secreted. That means healthy sleep habits and healthy growth are connected. The active sleep state is more restless. This is often the time with both children and adults when dreams occur. The extent to which babies dream is not fully understood, but during this period, a parent will notice their baby's arms and legs stir, the eyes flutter, and facial muscles move, sucking, frowning, and chewing motions. Breathing is irregular and slightly faster. No promises, but while we cannot offer any guarantees, we can provide the following statistics that represent PDF norms. The following conclusions were drawn from a sampling of 520 infants, 266 boys, and 254 girls, of which 380 were exclusively breastfed, 59 were exclusively formula-fed, and 81 were fed a combination of breast milk and formula. There were 468 babies with no medical conditions and 52 with medical conditions detected at birth or shortly after birth. Included in the medical conditions profile were 15 premature infants. All parents followed the PDF strategy. For the breastfed babies, routine feedings were defined as feeding every 2.5 to 3 hours for the first 8 weeks. For the formula-fed babies, routine feedings were every 3 to 4 hours. Nighttime sleep was defined as sleeping continuously 7 to 8 hours through the night. Volunteer subjects were drawn from the United States, Canada, and New Zealand. The study revealed the following. Category 1. Exclusively breastfed babies. Of the breastfed girls, 86.9% were sleeping through the night between 7 to 9 weeks, and 97% were sleeping through the night by 12 weeks of age. Of the breastfed boys, 76.8% were sleeping through the night between 7 and 9 weeks, and 96% were sleeping through the night by 12 weeks. Category 2. Exclusively formula-fed babies. Of the formula-fed girls, 82.1% were sleeping through the night between 7 to 9 weeks, and 96.4% were sleeping through the night by 12 weeks. Of the formula-fed boys, 78.3% were sleeping through the night between 7 to 9 weeks, and 95.7% were sleeping through the night by 12 weeks. Category 3. The medical conditions. Of the 52 infants with medical conditions, for example, reflux, colic, premature delivery, viral infections, and unspecified hospitalizations, all slept 8 to 9 hours through the night between 13 and 16 weeks. As the statistical percentages demonstrate, parents can guide their babies' sleep-wake rhythms quite early and with a high degree of predictability. In addition, 80% of the babies in our survey began sleeping through the night on their own without any further parental guidance apart from routine feedings. It just happened. There were some periods of night crying by the remaining 20% of infants. Most of that took place over a 3-day period, and the crying was between 5 to 35 minutes in the middle of the night. On average, it took 3 to 5 days for a 9-week-old baby to break the old patterns of waking during the night and to acquire the skill of sleeping through the night. Healthy sleep patterns. How well did you sleep last night? Is a question spouses often ask each other. Yet we never ask, how well was your wake time today? Did you know that there are different levels of wakefulness? While sleep ranges from a relaxed sleep to fitful sleep, the awake state ranges from tiredness to optimal alertness. Most important is the fact that optimal sleep is linked to optimal alertness, which directly impacts optimal learning. What role does healthy sleep play in the developmental process? The documented fact is that babies who sleep well at night make for smarter children. In his book, Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child, Dr. Mark Weissbluth, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at Children's Memorial Hospital in Chicago, references the work of Dr. Lewis M. Terman. Dr. Terman is best known for the Stanford-Binet intelligence test. According to Weissbluth, Terman's findings, published in 1925, on factors influencing IQ, continue to stand unchallenged to this day. His study looked at 3,000 children. In every age category, children who were found to have superior intelligence had one common link. All of them had experienced healthy and sustained nighttime sleep from early infancy until the day they were tested. In 1983, Dr. Terman's studies were objectively repeated by Canadian researchers, and the same conclusions were reached. Children with healthy sleep patterns clearly had higher IQs than children who did not sleep well. Dr. Weissbluth speaks not only on the positive aspects of healthy sleep, but also on the negative aspects of disruptive sleep. He warns parents that sleep problems not only disrupt a child's nights, they also disrupt his days by making him less mentally alert, more inattentive, unable to concentrate, or easily distracted, and by making him more physically impulsive, hyperactive, or alternatively lazy. Infants and toddlers who suffer from the lack of healthy naps and continuous nighttime sleep may experience chronic fatigue. Fatigue in babies and young children is a primary cause of fussiness, daytime irritability, crankiness, discontentment, colic-like symptoms, hypertension, poor focusing skills, and poor eating habits. In contrast, children who establish healthy sleep habits are optimally awake and optimally alert to interact with their environment. These children are self-assured and happy, less demanding, and more sociable. They have longer attention spans and, as a result, become faster learners. Sleep props. The typical infant has the natural ability to sleep through the night sometime by the end of the second month of life. It is an acquired skill, enhanced by routine. Sleep deprivation in infants and toddlers, on the other hand, reflects the absence of that skill being achieved. There are a number of possible reasons for this, but at the top of the list are a variety of sleep props, those objects used to help a baby fall asleep or fall back to sleep if he wakes prematurely. Since sleep is a natural function of the body, the primary sleep cue is sleepiness. Sleep props interfere with the process by becoming the substitute sleep cue instead of sleepiness. Now, falling asleep on his own is out of baby's control because it requires a parent's presence to offer the prop. Some sleep props, such as a special blanket or a stuffed animal, are harmless, while others can become addictive. Here are a few sleep props to avoid. Intentionally nursing your baby to sleep. The scenario is all too familiar. A mother nurses her baby to sleep. Slowly raising herself from the chair, she eases toward the crib. While holding her breath, she gently lowers the precious bundle and allows herself to smile. Then, frozen in time, she anxiously awaits peace to settle over the crib before backing to the door. She wonders what she will experience this time. Freedom or failure? Hoping to escape, the mother knows that if her baby fusses, she will feel obliged to begin the process all over again. Is it poor mother or poor baby? Is nursing appropriate for inducing sleep every time sleep is needed? No. With the PDF plan, babies will establish healthy sleep patterns. When baby is placed in the crib, he is usually awake. No tiptoeing, breath holding, or absolute quiet is required. He may cry for a few minutes or talk to himself, but he will fall asleep without intervention from mom or dad. Motion and vibration sleep props. Modern mechanical sleep props rely on specific stimulation to lull a baby to sleep, either when the baby is first showing signs of tiredness or after the baby wakes prematurely. The most common motion sleep prop is the rocking chair. The question here is not whether you should rock or cuddle your baby. We hope that happens often. But are you using rocking or a variety of dancing motions as sleep props? Other similar props include the vibrating crib mattress and the baby swing. Some parents have tried the unsafe practice of placing their baby on top of a vibrating clothes dryer. Of course, when all else fails, there is also the nightly drive with baby in the car seat. The sound of the motor and the vibrating chassis of the car sends baby to dreamland sometimes. These sleep props work to some extent, but only until the dryer runs out of time, the car runs out of gas, or mom and dad run out of patience. In the short and long run, putting baby to bed while he is drowsy but still awake facilitates longer and stronger sleep cycles than if placed in the crib already asleep. Sleeping with your baby. Using any of the sleep props just noted may not be the best way to help a child fall asleep and stay asleep, but none of them places a baby at risk. There is, however, one sleep arrangement that has proven very dangerous: sleeping in the same bed with an infant. To the point of becoming faddish, co-sleeping with an infant is on the rise. Maybe you are contemplating the practice for your own family. Some theorists will tell you bed sharing with an infant is the ultimate bonding, attachment, and nighttime breastfeeding experience. It is also deadly. What facts do we know about co-sleeping with an infant? Since 1997, the American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, and the U.S. Consumer Protect Safety Commission have put out medical alerts warning parents of the death risk associated with sleeping next to an infant. The 7-year study tracked the deaths of over 500 infants due to parents lying next to their babies in such a way that they were partially or totally covering them. Do not be misled by that number. It is a small fraction of the actual parental overlay cases occurring each year in the U.S. The American Academy of Pediatrics public policy statement reads, "There are no scientific studies demonstrating that bed sharing reduces SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Conversely, there are studies suggesting that bed sharing under certain conditions may actually increase the risk of SIDS." Further, in 2005, the AAP Task Force on SIDS labeled shared sleep with infants as a highly controversial topic and called the practice of bed sharing hazardous. This is why co-sleeping with infants may be the ultimate risk decision of our day. Infant deaths related to unsafe sleeping practices have reached epidemic proportions, and every one of those deaths was preventable. Infant deaths from SIDS are tragic, but deaths from parental overlay as a result of following a dangerous parenting philosophy are both tragic and needless. Safe and sensible sleeping arrangements start with baby out of mom and dad's bed. Where should my baby sleep? Where should the crib or bassinet be located? This question should be answered before the baby arrives. Will it be in the parents' or the baby's room? There are advantages and disadvantages to both locations. The advantage to having the baby sleep in the parents' room for the first 2 or 3 weeks is limited to convenience for the nighttime feedings. Your newborn will need to feed at least every 3 hours, so the closeness of the crib is helpful. One downside is all the unfamiliar sounds and stirring noises babies tend to make. This will keep new parents awake, wondering if all is okay with the baby. A second downside has to do with baby's ability to achieve continuous nighttime sleep. Sharing a room after 4 weeks can postpone a baby's ability to sleep through the night upward to 4 months. If your baby is placed in his own room and you are unsure about that arrangement, consider purchasing a monitor, which will alert you to any immediate need your baby might have. Summary. The best and safest way to help your little one fall asleep and stay asleep is the natural way. You do not need costly gadgets, a new car, or risky parenting theories. Instead of a sleep prop, confidently establish a basic routine to promote restful sleep. Feed your baby, rock, and love him, but put him down in his own crib before he falls asleep. Join us online as we continue the conversation at www.babywise.life. with more medical research, real-life stories, and insights from experienced BabyWise parents. Chapter 4. Facts on Feeding. Cuddles, kisses, and proper nutrition. This is a good way to start life as a baby. Cuddles and kisses are the easy part, but what constitutes proper nutrition, and where does it come from? Whether the calories come from breast or bottle, mother's milk, or formula, what is of prime importance is the tender affection provided during feeding times. There is, however, a difference in the two food sources, and understanding those differences will help provide the confidence parents need to make an informed decision about what is best for their baby and family. What do expectant parents need to know? First, feeding a baby is perhaps the most basic task of infant management. A baby's sucking and rooting reflexes are well developed at birth, and he will satisfy those reflexes by rooting and sucking on anything near his mouth. When it comes to a broad comparison between breast milk and formula, it is no surprise that mother's milk is the perfect food for babies, providing numerous health benefits. According to the AAP, research evidence suggests that breast milk decreases the incidence or severity of diarrhea, lower respiratory infections, bacterial meningitis, and urinary tract infection. The Academy also points out various studies demonstrating that breast milk may help protect against sudden infant death syndrome, allergic diseases, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, and other chronic digestive diseases. Breast milk is easily digested, provides excellent nutrition, contains the right balance of proteins and fats, and also provides additional antibodies for building a baby's immune system. Unlike formula, which needs to be prepared, stored, warmed, and packed for every outing, breast milk is ready whenever and wherever. As long as the breast milk remains inside mom, it never goes bad and has no expiration date. There are also health benefits for mom. Breastfeeding enhances the return of the uterus to its normal size and shape, and often helps facilitate postpartum weight loss. What new mother is not eager to get back into pre-pregnancy clothes? In addition, recent studies suggest that breastfeeding may benefit mom by reducing the risk of breast cancer, type 2 diabetes, and osteoporosis later in life. Breastfeeding trends. Despite the numerous benefits of breastfeeding, the most recent data from the Center for Disease Control, fall 2010, says that while 40% of new mothers start out breastfeeding exclusively, only 17% continue after 6 months, and the numbers by 12 months remain stagnant and low. Why do so many mothers choose against the nourishment, convenience, and physical closeness of breastfeeding? Perhaps the decision to quit becomes a necessity for distraught and fatigued mothers who are unable to cope with the endless demands created by a lack of routine feedings and predictability in the home. Mothers following the PDF method have a different story to tell. A retrospective sampling was taken of over 240 mothers following the principles of PDF. The survey showed that 88% of mothers who started with PDF breastfed, and 80% of those moms breastfed exclusively, no formula supplements. While the national average of mothers breastfeeding dropped to 17% at 6 months, a full 70% of PDF mothers were exclusively breastfeeding after 6 months. Add to these statistics the benefits of uninterrupted nighttime sleep, and at once you see the benefits of PDF. Hunger cues. Responding promptly to a newborn's hunger cue is central to both cry feeding and parent-directed feeding, but there is a major difference. The PDF approach encourages full feedings about every 2.5 to 3 hours rather than a cluster of small feedings. Working to achieve full feedings is a key to PDF success. Just listen to your baby's cues is good advice, if you know what to listen and look for. As a baby is nearing the end of a sleep cycle, he will often make little sucking sounds and may even bring his hand towards his mouth and begin sucking. Then the parents may hear a slight whimpering, which can grow into a full cry. Those are all cues that it is time to eat, but there is no need to wait until the baby is in a full cry before feeding him, especially if the other signs are present. The hunger cue should always trump the time on the clock. There are some unwelcome feeding cues to watch out for. For example, a baby nursing every hour may be a signal that he is not receiving the rich, high-calorie hind milk, or, equally concerning, that baby is not getting the quality sleep needed. Remember, healthy sleep facilitates healthy nursing, which in turn fosters healthy growth. Fatigued babies do not nurse well, and therefore will want to nurse more often. Mom's chronic fatigue is another unwelcome cue. When she continually wakes in the morning exhausted from multiple middle-of-the-night feeding sessions, her body is telling her that what she is doing is not working and needs to be changed. Milk production and full feedings. If breastfeeding is your choice, here are some basic principles of physiology to understand. First, success with breastfeeding is based on demand and supply, not to be confused with the economic concept of supply and demand. This means the supply of milk produced is proportional to the demand placed on the system. Adequate demand produces adequate supply, but how does one define adequate and demand? The explanation that milk production is directly related to the number of feedings is only partially true. Certainly, a mother who takes baby to breast 8 times a day will produce more milk than the one who only offers 2 feedings a day, but there are limits. A mother who takes baby to breast 12, 15, or 20 times a day will not necessarily produce more milk than the mom who nurses 8 to 10 times a day. The comparison here is not with the number of feedings in a day, but the quality of each nursing period. Babies on a routine may take fewer feedings, but they take in more calories at each feeding than babies who typically demand feed with no observable routine. The difference here is qualitative feeding, as with a baby on a routine, versus quantitative feeding, meaning more feedings with less quality. The PDF approach provides for sufficient demand, which also facilitates a baby taking full feedings. Whether you breast or bottle feed, a full feeding at each feeding is one of the goals to work toward. Do not panic if it does not happen at each feeding, but this is what you are working toward. What are key characteristics associated with a full feeding? The more obvious ones include a sufficient amount of time to receive a full feeding, 10 to 15 minutes per breast, or 20 to 30 minutes for formula-fed babies is the minimum. Hearing the swallowing of milk. The baby pulling away from the breast or bottle when satiated. The baby burping well after feeding. The baby napping well. In contrast, babies who snack a few minutes here and there do not derive the benefits that come with full feedings. Snack feeding, or clusters of snack feedings, work against a baby's ability to organize and synchronize hunger rhythms. There is also potential health risk. The more a baby snacks, the less nutrition he receives. The less nutrition he receives, the greater the health risk. The key to efficient milk production for full feedings is the combination of proper breast stimulation with an appropriate amount of time between feedings. Breast stimulation refers to the intensity of a baby's suck, which is driven by the baby's hunger. The strength of this drive is directly related to the time needed for the milk to digest and for absorption to take place. Typically, infants fed on a 2.5 to 3 hour routine have a stable digestive metabolism and demand more milk than babies who periodically snack throughout the day. Taking care of mom. Nothing is more basic to breastfeeding success than taking care of mom's nutritional needs, beginning with proper hydration. While it is important to eat a balanced diet with plenty of wholesome fruits, vegetables, grains, protein, and calcium-rich foods, mom must also take in sufficient liquids. She should not wait until she is thirsty to drink, because thirst is a late indicator that the body needs liquids. Nursing mothers should drink 6 to 8 ounces of water at or around each feeding. Liquids can also include juice, mild tea, and broth. Beverages with significant amounts of caffeine do not count, because the caffeine causes the body to excrete the amount of liquid taken in. Ironically, too much water in a 24-hour period, over 12 8-ounce glasses a day, will decrease milk production. The warning signs that mom is not drinking enough water include thirst, concentrated urine, deep yellow, and constipation. For your baby's sake and your own health, stay hydrated. The letdown reflex. When the baby begins to suckle, a message is sent to the mother's pituitary gland for the release of two hormones, prolactin and oxytocin. Prolactin is necessary for milk production and oxytocin for the release of the milk. As a baby begins to nurse, he first receives the milk stored in the ducts under the areolae, or colored spots under the nipple. This foremilk, as it is called, is diluted and limited in nutritional value. As the baby continues to suck, oxytocin causes the cells around the milk glands to contract, forcing milk into the ducts. The sensation of milk being released is described as letting down. The milk that is now let down is the hind milk. This high-protein, high-fat milk is rich in calories, 30 to 40 per ounce, and exactly what the baby needs to grow. Breast milk and baby's digestion. A new mother might come across internet blog posts such as this. Breast milk is easier to digest than formula, so breastfed babies become hungry more quickly, requiring more frequent feedings. And because a baby's stomach empties more quickly with breast milk, breastfed babies cannot sleep through the night. The first statement contains some relevant truth. The second does not. Does an empty stomach trigger the hunger drive? No. Efficient and effective digestion and absorption of food does. Absorption, which takes place primarily in the small intestine, is the process by which broken-down food molecules pass through the intestinal lining into the bloodstream. As absorption is accomplished, the blood sugar level drops, sending a signal to the hypothalamus gland that the baby, or anyone, now needs food. It is a drop in blood sugar, not an empty tummy, that signals feeding time. Therefore, comparing breast milk with formula has little value in this regard, but comparing efficient nursing and full feedings against numerous snack feedings does. While it is true that breast milk is digested faster than formula, it does not mean breastfed infants need to feed more often, but it does mean they need to feed efficiently. Nursing that assures a full feeding provides the sustaining nutrition that breastfed babies need. Moms who follow the PDF program will help make that happen. If a mother follows the reattachment model of breastfeeding, she will experience many, many feedings, not all of which will be efficient or satisfying to her baby. Feeding and hygiene considerations. Most germs are transferred by the hands. When it comes to newborn care, keeping your hands clean by washing with soap and water is one of the most important steps of proper hygiene, especially just before feeding your baby. Washing hands with soap and water for a minimum of 20 seconds is the best practice for lifting out and removing germs. We emphasize the use of soap and water over hand sanitizer. While very effective, hand sanitizers do not significantly reduce the number of bacteria on the hand, in part because they are not designed to remove dirt like soap and water can. The commonly cited claim that hand sanitizers can achieve 99% effectiveness is slightly misleading, since the claim is based on the product's effectiveness to destroy bacteria on non-porous, hard surfaces and not on hands. When soap and water is not available, and you do use hand sanitizer, the Center for Disease Control's public website, www.cdc.gov, suggests using products that contain at least 60% alcohol for maximum hygiene results. Washing your hands is not just a good practice for mom and dad to establish, but it is one to insist on for anyone who will be holding their newborn. With a baby in one's arms, the natural impulse is to touch baby's face, nose, or chin, or hold and examine his little fingers. While touching is part of the human experience, caution dictates hand washing. Proper nursing positions. Imperative for successful lactation is the correct positioning of a baby on his mother's breast. Proper latching on the breast requires baby's entire body, head, chest, stomach, and legs to be aligned and facing mom's breast. If the head is twisted away from his body, then the baby will not be able to nurse efficiently. Try to imagine sitting in a chair and then turning your head sideways while trying to receive a drink from someone standing behind you. Since your mouth is not centered on the cup, trying to drink and swallow is difficult because your esophagus is pinched at the point where your head is turned. That is what it is like when a baby is not aligned properly on his mother's breast. The uncomfortable neck position makes nursing and swallowing difficult and feeding inefficient. A mom will know her baby is positioned correctly if the tip of the baby's nose is brushing slightly against her breast and his knees are resting on her abdomen. Once mom has her baby's body properly aligned, then she takes her nipple and strokes lightly downward on her baby's lower lip until his mouth opens. Why the lower lip? It is connected to the jaw, which instinctively opens to receive food. The upper lip is connected to the upper face and head and stays stationary when the baby eats. All the reflexes needed to suck, chew, and swallow are in the lower mouth, thus the nursing stimulus is found in the lower lip. With lower lip stimulation, a baby will naturally open his mouth, allowing mom to center her nipple while pulling the baby close to her breast. When this is done, the baby will latch onto the nipple and the areola, not just the nipple. To further assist in achieving successful feeding, there are three interchangeable nursing positions: cradle, side-lying, and football hold. To see diagrams of these three positions, please visit www.babywise.life/audiobook. Most commonly used is the cradle position. Sitting in a comfortable chair, place your baby's head in the curve of your arm. Placing a pillow under your supporting arm will lessen the stress on your neck and upper back. Remember to keep your baby's entire body properly aligned and facing mom's breasts. Mothers recovering from a cesarean birth will often use the side-lying position because of their abdominal sensitivity. The illustration shows mom in a reclining position with her baby supported by a pillow. The baby and mom's tummies should be facing each other, although not touching. The baby's head should be centered on the breast. To use the football hold, place one hand under baby's head while lifting and supporting the breast with the other hand. With your fingers above and below the nipple, introduce the baby to the breast by drawing him near. As explained previously, stroke lightly downward on baby's lower lip until he opens his mouth. When his mouth opens wide, center your nipple and draw him close to you so the tip of his nose is touching your breast. How often should I nurse? The first general rule is to always feed a hungry baby. How often that occurs depends on the uniqueness of each child. On average, for the first few weeks, babies signal for food every 2.5 to 3 hours. It may be less, and sometimes slightly more. How do you measure the time between feedings? It is best measured from the beginning of one feeding to the beginning of the next. There are two components involved: the time it takes for a feeding, approximately 20 to 30 minutes, and the total wake and sleep time, which averages 2 hours. Add them together and you come up with your 2.5-hour feeding cycle. A 3-hour routine reflects the same components but with a longer wake and sleep time. With these recommended times, you will average between 8 and 10 feedings a day in the early weeks, which falls within the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Can infants adapt or learn to respond to feeding routines in the early weeks of life? Researcher D.P. Marquis compared babies fed on a 3-hour routine, a 4-hour routine, and on-demand. The study concluded that while all three groups demonstrated a considerable capacity to adapt to whatever the feeding environment required, the preferred period by all the babies, as demonstrated by their collective outcomes, was 3 hours. Even the babies fed on demand had a natural inclination to organize their feeding times to reflect a 3-hour routine. Babies who were fed every 4 hours showed a preference toward 3 hours. One amazing aspect of this study is the year it was conducted, 1941. Here we are, more than 70 years later, and the findings have been duplicated but never repudiated. An infant's natural inclination is to organize his feeding into predictable cycles early in life. One reason the PDF philosophy is so successful is it supports and encourages these natural inclinations of a baby toward routine and predictable feedings. Time ranges in a baby's day. When discussing time increments for feedings, wake times, and naps, baby-wise recommendations are given in ranges of time, and not as specific times. For example, you will hear that feeding times usually fall between 2.5 to 3 hours, and nap times between 1.5 to 2 hours. It can be tempting to assume the higher number is better than the lower. For example, mom might assume 2 hours is the better length of time for naps. But that may not always be the case, since some babies will tend to nap 2 hours, some 1.5 hours, and others in between the two. The range of normal times is just that, a range. It is not a scale of good, better, and best, with the higher number always representing best. As long as the activity falls within the normal range, it will be the right amount of time for your baby. While 2.5 to 3 hour feeding cycles provide a healthy average, there will be occasions when a feeding comes sooner, but this should be the exception, not the rule. One of the first breastfeeding challenges is falling into the habit of feeding too often, such as 1.5 to 2 hour intervals, or letting the baby go too long, such as more than 3.5 hours. Feeding a baby too often can wear a mother down, reducing her physical ability to produce a sufficient quantity and quality of milk. When you add postpartum hormones to that mix, is it any wonder many women simply throw in the towel when it comes to breastfeeding? In contrast, not offering enough feedings during the day because baby's hunger cycles are going longer than 3.5 hours fails to provide sufficient stimulation to produce a lasting milk supply. Staying close to the 2.5 to 3 hour range in the first few weeks will serve mom's lactation and baby's nutritional needs. The three milk phases. The first milk produced is a thick, yellowish liquid called colostrum. Colostrum is at least 5 times higher in protein, while lower in sugar and fat compared to the more mature breast milk that has yet to come in. Acting as a protein concentrate, colostrum is rich in antibodies that protect the baby from a wide variety of bacterial and viral illnesses. It also encourages the passage of meconium stool, which is the first stool the baby passes. The meconium stool is greenish-black and sticky in texture, comprising everything collected in utero, including body hair, mucus, bile, and amniotic fluid. Within 2 to 4 days, a breastfeeding mother starts to produce a transition milk, which can last from 7 to 14 days. The content of this milk has less protein than colostrum, but an increase in fat, lactose, calories, and water-soluble vitamins. The transition milk is followed by regular breast milk, known as mature milk. The mature milk is made up of foremilk and hind milk, which contain different quantities of lactose, milk sugars, and fats. The foremilk is released first from the breast and is generally thin in consistency and lower in fat content, but higher in lactose, satisfying the baby's thirst and liquid needs. Hind milk is released after several minutes of nursing. It is similar in texture to cream and has high levels of fat that are necessary for weight gain and brain development. There are properties in the hind milk not found in foremilk that help the baby break down and pass waste, establishing healthy elimination patterns. A few more facts. Once the milk is in, nursing periods will average 15 minutes per side. Breast tenderness in the days before the mature milk comes in is not uncommon. This is because the baby tends to suck hard to receive the colostrum, which is thicker than the mature milk. A typical pattern is suck, 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 swallow. When mature milk becomes available, your baby responds with a rhythmic suck, swallow, suck, swallow, suck, swallow. At that point, the hard sucking is reduced and the tenderness should cease. Another fact to consider is the speed in which a baby will empty the breast. Some babies get right down to business and get the job done quickly, while others take their meal at a more leisurely pace. Studies show that in established lactation, some babies can empty the breasts in 7 to 10 minutes per side if he or she is sucking vigorously. It's not necessarily gender-specific. This astounding truth is not meant to encourage less time at the breast, but is a clear demonstration of a baby's ability for speed and efficiency. Nursing challenges in the first 10 days. The length of nursing periods and the span between them will change as the baby's needs change. A healthy start for mom begins with an appreciation for the miracle of birth and a mother's ability to provide life-giving nutrition. The very first nursing period. A heavenly drama begins to unfold the first time a baby is brought to his mother and he begins to nurse. It is a treasured moment to be enjoyed, looking into your newborn's eyes, as there will only be one first nursing period with this baby. Do not worry about trying to get it right. Your baby will know what to do. Most babies are alert for the first hour and a half after birth, making it the ideal time to bring the baby to breast. An initial time of 10 to 15 minutes per side will allow for sufficient breast stimulation. Remember, the first thing to stay mindful of is the proper positioning of baby. This not only facilitates proper nursing, but helps to prevent soreness. For this first and the next several feedings, nurse as long as you feel comfortable, staying mindful that both breasts need to be stimulated at each feeding. The sleepy baby. After the initial period of postpartum alertness, babies love their sleep. In fact, one of the first challenges new parents can expect is the baby's tendency to be too sleepy to take a feeding. Newborns need to be fed every 2 to 3 hours, so that means, sleepy or not, baby must eat. How can you get a sleepy baby to stay awake long enough to take a full feeding? Mom or dad can remove everything but the baby's diaper and hold him skin to skin. Try gently massaging or stroking baby's face, rubbing his feet, changing his diaper, gently talking or sharing your deepest thoughts out loud. Baby is a good listener and will enjoy the sound of your voice. Be creative and do what it takes to get that feeding in. Misunderstanding birth weight. Although the hours and days surrounding the birth of a baby are usually filled with celebrating and optimism, the first discouraging news comes a day or so later when parents are told their baby lost some weight since birth. These words strike fear into the heart of a new mother, causing her to think she is not providing her baby adequate nutrition, especially if she is breastfeeding. However, she can take some comfort in the fact that the same thing happens with formula-fed babies. Although most babies lose 5 to 7% of their recorded birth weight and can lose up to 10% and be within the normal weight loss limits, it is unfortunate that this initial drop in weight is described as weight loss. It makes it sound as if a newborn is actually losing weight that he needs, as opposed to losing the extra weight he was born with. The fact is, babies are born with additional fluids and the meconium stool. When these are passed, the adjusted weight reflects the baby's true weight. Dr. Bucknum recommends that parents know their baby's weight at the time of hospital discharge in addition to the birth weight. Measuring food intake. Mothers naturally want to know if their babies are receiving sufficient nutrition to grow on. What should she be looking for? 5 to 7 wet diapers per day after the first week, 3 to 5 or more yellow stools daily for the first month, and consistent weight gain are good indicators that a baby is receiving enough milk for healthy growth. To help track your baby's growth over the first 2 months, please review the healthy baby growth charts in the appendices and fill them in religiously. These charts can be found at www.babywise.life/audiobook. The first 7 to 10 days. Nursing during the first 7 to 10 days is a time when mom and baby really find their equilibrium. These are precious moments, and not a time to be overly concerned about the clock, feeding routines, or sleep training. In fact, we encourage parents to turn their clocks against the wall, figuratively speaking, and work on the single goal of providing a full feeding at each feeding. Mothers who work with their babies to receive a full feeding during the first week commonly find their babies naturally transition to a consistent 2.5 to 3 hour routine within 7 to 10 days. The nursing period for the first couple of weeks may average between 30 to 40 minutes per feeding. Please note that these figures are based on an average. Some newborns nurse faster and more efficiently. Others nurse efficiently, but slightly slower. How long is a nursing period? Some mothers